Welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Varsha.
And I'm Devin. And today on the pod, we're going to talk about the ongoing catastrophe that is our government kidnapping children at our southern border. We're also going to get into trade policy very briefly. It's really hard for me to care about any story that's not the story about the immigration policy at the border, but I think what's going on with China in that is super, super important. So we're going to get into that a little bit. Before we jump in, Varsha, how was your weekend?
It was really good. I had really, really good Ethiopian food, which was really good. I really like Ethiopian food because you just eat it with your hands, so it reminds me of Indian food. Besides that, it was a pretty relaxing weekend. I got to eat out a lot, and then it was just really relaxing. Got to see DC, so I really liked it. How about yours?
That's great. No, I had a great weekend too. Yeah, a lot of fun. On Sunday, at my gym, they did a whole, well, last week on Thursday, we did an ACLU fundraiser, and we rode for 21,000 meters, and that was awful, but great. We raised like over $2,000 for the ACLU, which was really cool. So a lot of working out. It's been my release with all of this really particularly shitty news.
Yeah.
I found myself going to the gym a lot because it really gets my mind off. So there's been a lot of that.
Yeah, today is an exceptionally shitty day.
Agreed.
Okay, Devin, so what's been going on with the issue of immigration this past week?
Well, I want to start this section by talking about a slightly unrelated story, but I think it's important longer context for what's going on here. So the U.S. has backed out of the United Nations Human Rights Council. So Nikki Haley, who's the ambassador to the United Nations, said that the council was, quote, a cesspool of political bias and that it is hypocritical and self-serving organization that makes a mockery of human rights and is, quote, not worthy of its name. So, and this withdrawal, of course, comes after the UN's human rights chief called this immigration policy unconscionable. So I mean, first, I feel like at this point, we really don't have a leg to stand on to be in the United Nations Human Rights Council. And so us leaving it is almost like, yeah, I mean, we really shouldn't be on there.
Yeah, I mean, anyway. I get Nikki Haley and Pompeo's argument that there are some countries on the Human Rights Council that should not be on the council. Right, that's the decision Obama made when he decided to join the council because Bush decided against it, was that it's better to work from the inside and push the council to do better things than it is to be on the outside just standing outside because the council isn't perfect is bullshit.
Right.
And so even though there are some unsavory and frankly horrific actors on the Human Rights Council, it's better to work from the inside. And Nikki Haley is saying, no, it's better to leave the council because they're mean to Israel. It's not like they're going to be nice to Israel once I leave, but I'm just going to leave and throw a hissy fit, which I don't really understand is like the tactical genius of this. Because everyone, whenever they like to troll the fact that, you know, the first female president is going to be Nikki Haley, they point to the fact that she's like been a strategic genius on the UN. You know, she's like, she's echoing the spirit of Donald Trump while still being super Republican and super pragmatic on foreign policy. I'm looking at this decision and being like, this is just moronic, right? Like, we all know the Trump administration loves Israel. That's why they moved the embassy to Jerusalem. You don't need to leave the Human Rights Council because they're being mean to Israel as, like, a solution. Like, it doesn't solve anything, you know? So, like, that's why I disagree with it. It's like, I understand all the reasons to leave. I understand all the problems of the Human Rights Council. I just see this as another way that the Trump administration is leaving an institution without actually solving the problem underneath, right? Because later we're going to talk about tariffs and we're going to talk about, you talk about immigration. They're not solving the underlying problems. They're just leaving the symptoms and like fucking over the rest of the world.
Well, and here's the thing. I mean, to your point, Varsha, I think Nikki Haley is probably one of the the smarter people in the Trump administration. That's a low fucking bar, right? that's like lowest rung possible. But I will say that I think that of everyone in this administration, I've seen Nikki Haley navigate it the most deftly. I wouldn't say brilliantly or, you know, with any sort of, like you said, technical genius, but I'll give her deftly. She also isn't in the spotlight a ton, you know, especially because so much of our most fucked up policy is domestic, not foreign. She hasn't had a ton of opportunities to fuck up. So there's that. So, I mean, here's the thing. Like you said, the Human Rights Council is not perfect, but what is? And the thing is in politics, so much of politics is optics. And so to say, oh, we're leaving because this council is a political cesspool is absolute fucking bullshit. Because part of being part of the global political community is the optics of it.
Yeah.
And to leave this council is basically saying, nah, especially because it's under Trump. If it were under another president, I could maybe see an argument to be made that like the US is leaving in protest and that if we don't stay there, maybe other countries won't stay there and then it will be forced to reform itself. But under this president specifically, I feel like people keep removing this presidency and these decisions out of context. But the fact of the matter is the fact that we're leaving the US Human Rights Council under this administration while we are abducting children at our southern borders really says something about the way our government is functioning right now. And I think it's impossible to tease out the more nuanced political calculus in leaving the UN, you know, Human Rights Council from the shitty optics that Trump doesn't care about people. He doesn't care about kids and also apparently not human rights because we can't even stay in the Human Rights Council.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of obvious Trump doesn't give a fuck about human rights because he never mentions it when he visits dictatorships. Korea.
Oh, in fact, he fucking loves dictatorships.
Yeah, and like but he only mentions it when the country in question is like a country he wants to piss on, right?
So right.
He mentioned it in the case of Iran, and then in specific cases in North Korea, like when he's talking about like Otto Warmbier or other people to like rile up his base, because like in the last State of the Union, he mentioned it, right? But now that Kim Jong-un is his best friend, he's not going to mention it. So it's just, it's opportunistic in the way that they mention human rights, which is no different from anybody else on the fucking council. So that's what's really funny here is that, you know, they think they're leaving, you know, Nikki Haley thinks she's leaving because the U.S. has some other, you know,
moral high ground goal, here,
you know, like more solid goal for like human rights. But really she and the U.S. is just as hypocritical. And we have been just hypocritical under Obama, under Bush. I'm just saying like at this point, it's just more explicit because it's not just that the U.N. is attacking us for kidnapping children at the border, because that's what they've said. They're also mad at us because we're not examining poverty in our country. They're also probably pissed at us because, like, for some reason, the Red Cross has not been let into these detention centers, which has nothing to do with the UN. It's just, we are just, like, shunning every international body away from the United States. And it's just weird because we are supposed to be the country that embraces international institutions because it makes America stronger. Because we are a part of those international institutions, but the Trump administration just doesn't fucking care.
Well, right. And again, I love how you put that, right? Like we're saying we're protesting these countries that are using this council opportunistically when we are doing exactly the same thing. So it's a little rich of us to condemn that. And just on a side note and almost completely unrelatedly, you know, when you said that the Trump administration isn't allowing the Red Cross into these facilities that are housing children that have been separated from their parents forcibly at the border. And you know what that reminds me of? And again, we've talked about the limitations of this analogy, but I remember when I went to Israel with my in-laws like 10 years ago now, we went to Yad Vashem, which is the Holocaust Museum in Jerusalem. And one thing that they told us was that not, you know, the German government wouldn't allow the Red Cross into the concentration camps and instead released basically like produced press photos that they gave them that showed like tidy cots and like clean bathrooms that were actually never used and were just set up for the purposes of those pictures. And so again, I, like you said, Varsha, you are so eloquent on the limitations of Nazi Germany as a proxy for what's going on here. But it's just when you hear things like that, it's really hard not to have a visceral sort of reaction to that.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, it's not, it doesn't have to be a one-to-one analogy for us to understand that we are moving towards a government that doesn't believe in democratic institutions. Right. And you don't have to like, you don't have to be like, Trump is a national socialist to like totally believe that. You just have to like pay attention to the past two fucking years to realize that he is not a fan of democratic institutions. He's not a fan of international institutions. He's not a fan of any institution that reins in his power, especially when it comes to fucking over brown people and black people.
Well, and so speaking of our democratic institutions, I want to now talk about the gross denial of due process that the Trump administration is attempting to basically perpetrate in this immigration mess. So Trump has said last week and over the weekend, I think it was yesterday, he said, quote, "We must immediately send immigrants who illegally enter the U.S. back where they came," which, again, the grammar, Jesus fucking Christ, with quote, "no judges or court cases." And he said that those seeking asylum and those coming to our borders are basically trying to break into our country. And, quote, "we cannot allow all of these people to invade our country. When somebody comes in, we must immediately, with no judges or court cases, bring them back from where they came."
This is like so fucked up. It's no longer a dog whistle. It's just like a foghorn for "I hate democracy" and "fuck the courts."
Right.
And the thing is, the solution that this is like responding to, so like Trump is responding to this specifically because Ted Cruz and other Republicans want to hire a shit ton more immigration judges to make the quote unquote due process much faster. So even that is like a fucked up solution Ted Cruz is proposing, right? Hire a lot more immigration judges so we can prosecute everybody and throw everyone out of the country, right? Donald Trump is saying, fuck the due process. Let's just throw them out whenever we see them. But you see, the problem is the reason due process is important is to protect the innocent people. So, like, if I'm walking down the street in Tucson, Arizona, and I don't have my U.S. passport with me or my driver's license, some ICE official or some police officer, whatever, can like pick me up, be like, "You look Mexican," and like just throw me in an immigration center and throw me into And if I don't have a court case, just throw me onto a bus back to Mexico. And I'm just like, I've never fucking been to Mexico. Or they might assume that I am from an Arab country, or they might assume I'm from somewhere else, right? And so it's supposed to protect people like me, like you, like anyone else who may not look like they're a citizen, but they definitely are a citizen. Right? Like, that's what due process, like, exists for. It doesn't just exist for the fact that we have to be humane to people who are coming into our country. It also exists because you have to be humane to our actual fucking citizens. So that's why, like, and then so there are people on Twitter who are just like, "Oh no, I could prove that I was a citizen," but I'm like, who would you prove it to? There is no judge overseeing your case. There is no lawyer defending you. There is just the ICE official who thinks they want to throw you out of the country and will throw you out of the country.
Well, and honestly, and I've read reports saying that the limited process that we have, let alone due process that we have around this whole fucking mess, is really, you're really beholden to the immigration officer or the ICE officer that you interact with.
Yeah.
And they have a lot of discretion in how they handle you and your kids and your case because there's no fucking process in place. And so I think it's interesting that we're talking about due process. I mean, I'm not surprised, right? I feel like this has always been the goal. He's using words like infest, invade, animal. You know, he's framing this as a way to keep MS-13 out of the United States. Like, I'm not surprised that the next logical step of this goddamn motherfucking debate is let's get rid of judges and due process. And then that just slips into you know, this is about Democratic backsliding. This is slippage. This is where it's like, oh, well, he'll do it to those people, but he won't do it to me. He will other, you know, we can other those people, but it's never going to happen to me. So who really needs due process? I'm never going to need due process. Like, that's fine. And then you realize that, that is exactly how we get to the point where it doesn't seem strange that the Trump administration is trying to dissolve the Supreme Court. Not that he's trying to do that, but I'm saying you start by saying due process is bullshit and you work from there. And again, I know I sound a little tinfoil hat-y here and a little conspiratorial, but like that's the end, right? Like spin this all the way out. And also just the word, like the phrase due process has the word process right in there, which we currently don't have, like sorting through this mess. We don't have a process. We don't have policy in place to deal with any of this. And so, you know, again, I'm not surprised. We don't have a process. Who needs due process? We don't have any process. We don't have any sort of framework in which to deal with this. Trump signed this executive order, right, that to end the policy of family separation. And I actually talked to Ian Millhiser, who's the justice editor at Think Progress, on Thursday about this. And this executive order does not even work within the current law, the current process that we have.
Exactly.
You know, something called the Flores settlement, which says you can only detain minors for 20 days. And so this executive order is like, we're just going to detain them indefinitely with their families, and that fixes the problem. And like, yay me, like, I'm so good at politics. Like, I really liked Brittany Packnett's tweet on this. She said, quote, "Let's be 100,000,000% clear. There is no new plan for children already separated and detained," hence the lack of process. She goes on, "There's no plan to reunite families," lack of process. "There is no end to zero tolerance," duh, because they have no intention to do that. "And the EO seeks to detain children and families indefinitely, despite Flores," which is the Flores settlement I just mentioned. "This is not a win. I hate that they're doing a goddamn victory dance over this. I hate that there are some Democrats that are doing a victory dance over this." Like, you don't get to create a shitstorm and then pretend to fix the shitstorm and not actually do it and do a tap dance. Like, you gotta be fucking kidding me.
It's very bad. And it's like, they're, the way they're reuniting children is like very slow. But also, the way you know that they might still separate children is the incoherence in the ICE versus DOJ policy. So immediately after the executive order went down, I think ICE or CPB said, okay, we're no longer going to be sending parents who come here with their kids for prosecution. There's no zero tolerance for them, right? And then DOJ quickly sent out, like, no, we still are. We're still prosecuting everybody. And so, like, what that means is, like, at some point, quote unquote, 20 days down the line, the families they can no longer detain, they might either forever detain them, or they might again separate the parents from the kids. So they're like, either way, this is still very, very bad, because it doesn't mean that Donald Trump has changed his heart because he saw these like pictures or he heard the voices of these kids crying. He doesn't give a fuck. He just wants to find a way to have his cake, which is imprison children and parents, and eat it too, which is not allow anybody to seek asylum or anyone to immigrate here. Like, he wants it all.
Right. And on top of all of that, as if that weren't enough, he assumes disgustingly correctly that his base isn't going to abandon him here.
Yeah.
Because I think it was on CNN, someone, "Stop making me teary-eyed for the children." Like, if you're not teary-eyed for the children, I can't fucking help you.
Yeah.
Like you're, if you aren't already teary-eyed for the children, there's nothing I can say that will make you teary-eyed for the children. And then, you know, back to this due process, this and the slippage here and how this starts. And if you think that this beginning, this ending of due process for those people won't eventually come back to you, I have a fucking bridge to sell you. But the thing is that Trump is all about Trump's power. And like you said, that he's really into dictatorships and he's really into these dictators who kill their own people and don't like, you know, who have, there are no human rights in those countries. And Lawrence Tribe actually said, quote, Trump is making the tyrannical claim that he has the right to serve as prosecutor, judge, and jury with respect to all those who enter our country. That is a breathtaking assertion of unbounded power without any plausible limit. Again, I feel like this is key. I feel like I'm going to say this until I'm blue in the face. As if it weren't bad enough to remove due process from people who enter this country, which, by the way, due process is for everyone in this country, whether you're undocumented or not, which is another argument I've heard a lot, where it's like, this doesn't apply because you're not a citizen. Nope, fuck you. That's not how this works. But it's this idea of unbounded power. If you can't get behind the children and families whose lives are being destroyed, then don't at me. But even if we're working from there, everyone should be concerned about this unbounded power and this idea that our rights are somehow disposable when they no longer fit the narrative that the administration wants to give about this country. Well, and then Sarah Huckabee Sanders said, quote, just because you don't see a judge doesn't mean you don't receive due process.
That's exactly what it means.
I'm pretty sure if you look up due process in the dictionary, that's exactly what it means. But like, what the fuck do I know? Like, I'm just a person with a brain. So, you know,
it's so Orwellian. Is like, are you going to believe me or your lying eyes? It's like, if you, just because you don't see a judge doesn't mean you didn't have due process. And I'm just like, what the fuck, right? And it's also what's really frustrating here, and I really shouldn't be surprised, but it's like Donald Trump called for like due process for Rob Porter, his domestic abuse White House staffer, but not for the people who are lawfully seeking asylum in this country. Like, what the fuck?
Oh, I forgot about that. God damn it.
Yeah.
God damn it. I forgot about Rob Porter. You know, and I think this is a good segue into kind of this discussion about broader policy around immigration. And you know, Trump has tried to kick this problem to Congress, saying that it's Democrats' problem and the Democrats are the ones that created this problem. And again, so Orwellian, right? Yeah. Like, you can either believe what's actually happening or what Trump is telling you. And it's really scary how many people are just believing Trump without any sort of questioning.
Yeah.
But, you know, the other issue here is that it's not like this Congress, even though they have a majority, even though they control all three branches of government, they can't even pass policy that I hate and that I can yell about. They can't do anything. And they're not even really trying that hard, from what I understand. I mean, Paul Ryan keeps delaying votes and doesn't allow shit to come to the floor. Not even mentioning the Senate. At this point, we're just like, what the hell are you doing in the House, Paul Ryan? Trying to get immigration policy passed has always been fraught, and it's always been pretty much impossible. Obviously, if it weren't impossible, we would have done it already. But there are really a lot of dog whistly to foghorny kind of things going on with the immigration legislation in particular. So can you give us a rundown of what's being proposed in the House, what's working and what's not?
Yeah. So basically there are two House immigration bills that Paul Ryan is trying to push to the House and like try to get a vote on either one of them. And one of them is a quote unquote compromise bill, but really it's just a Republican bill because no Democrats have signed on to it, which gives status to Dreamers. It stops family separation, which has already happened. And it also like increases E-Verify and a bunch of other things, right? And there's also the Goodlatte bill, which is an even more extreme, like, right-wing version, which does all of this, but it also, like, cuts legal immigration, it ends the visa lottery, it does a lot of, like, horrific things that are just really bad, but both of them, like, neither of them are, like, compromise bills, but what's really fucked up is that, like, both of them, I think, give funding for the wall. What's really messed up is that Trump, like, initially supported both these bills, and he should support both of them because they both give him everything he wants. And then, like, he's like, he then is questioning the purpose of these bills and saying, no, don't do it. You know, like, I don't think any of these bills matter. And it's just like, And he's also saying they also don't matter because it's probably going to fail in the Senate because it won't get 60 votes because of obstructionist Democrats. So he's just like all over the place. But what's really the issue here is that like the only reason these two bills even exist is because Paul Ryan is too much of like a weak leader to let for a discharge position to materialize, which is basically Republicans siding with Democrats to get a bill through. And then he's also too pathetic to like tell his caucus the truth, because basically what the moderates wanted was like protection for the dreamers, right? And Ryan said, don't worry, you'll get that, just don't sign this discharge petition, we will write a moderate bill for you. And now like the moderates don't get anything because it looks like neither of these bills will pass, even though he has the fucking majority. One bill is too left-wing for the crazy House Freedom Caucus, and one bill is too right-wing for the moderate people. And both of them are way too crazy for, anybody in the Democratic Party. Yeah.
Yeah, everyone in the Democratic Party is like, I don't know why we're having this discussion, because fuck you.
Yeah.
Like, I joke, and again, it's not funny, but I always say I would be a lot more afraid of the Republican Party if Nancy Pelosi were a Republican. Because Paul Ryan has proven time and time again that he has no fucking ability to get anything done, to unify his party, or to take the control of all three branches of government under GOP control and do anything. So I'm like, yeah, you know, come for Nancy Pelosi, but you know, if Nancy Pelosi were the House majority leader, or Speaker of the House, this shit would have already passed. I'm just saying. Like, again, she would have gone to every single Democrat and been like, fuck your feelings. Don't care about your feelings. Yell at me in private. Vote for this in public. Whatever the bill that she had put forward was. So, I mean, I just like to take any opportunity I have. Like, it gives me great joy to remind everyone that Paul Ryan is a spineless, weak leader. Sometimes, you know, when this story gets particularly overwhelming, it warms my cold feminist heart to remember that Paul Ryan is so ineffectual that we can't even have a proper discussion about immigration reform policy. So, well done, Paul Ryan. You're a fucking loser.
Yep. It's so frustrating to have spent, I think, for the better part of a decade, people telling me that Paul Ryan is this amazing policy wonk and, like, smart legislator and, like, the darling of the Republican Party. And I'm just like, this guy is more of a moron than like anyone I have ever met, because he literally cannot control his own party. And like, he's probably going to be replaced in the fall if we don't take back the House. I hope we take back the House. If we don't take back the House.
Well, he's stepping down. He's stepping down. He's a lame duck. He's not running for re-election. He knows he's ineffectual. He knows he fucked.
Yeah.
He really fucked up here. And you know what? You want to talk about a smart Republican, and this is completely off topic, but this is something that fuels part of my rage at night. If you want to talk about a smart Republican, let's talk about Lisa fucking Murkowski.
Yeah.
She got primaried out of her seat in the Senate and then won on a write-in campaign with the last name Murkowski, which is hard to spell. I'm sorry. You want to talk about an effectual leader? You want to talk about someone who might actually be a, you know, a effective Republican or otherwise? Lisa Murkowski, please shut your damn mouth about Paul Ryan.
I don't know. Like, I don't know how to explain it, but it's just so frustrating that they can't even pass a simple bill to protect dreamers, which is what they purport that they want. But the reason they won't do it is another fucked up reason, is because, you know, the Constitution says that the Congress, the executive branch, and judicial branch are co-equal branches of our government, right? So Paul Ryan shouldn't give a fuck what Donald Trump wants to sign or doesn't sign. He should pass what his caucus wants to pass. And right now what Paul Ryan is saying is, I'm not going to pass this bill, or I'm not going to whip the votes for this bill, is because Donald Trump might not sign it. And the same thing, Republican senators are saying the same thing. I'm not going to vote for a bill that Donald Trump might not sign.
And that's even two steps ahead. Like he's even saying, I'm not going to vote for a bill that the Senate may or may not pass. They're not even at the point of getting it to Trump's desk at this point. Like, he's so afraid of Trump and his own Republican Party that he won't even bring up bills that he think might fail the Senate, which is kind of like saying, it's kind of like saying, I'm not going to study for this test because I don't know if I'm going to pass or not.
Well, even right? if he was worried about like a difficult vote for his caucus, he could do some math, figure out which of his caucus members have already been primaried or already going to be primaried, like which are running for re-election, which are not, and like find the perfect number to decide which one of them have to take the vote to say, yes, I'm going to pass this bill, and which of them don't, without losing that many seats. Like, no one's going to like primary them because they voted for something that like 90% of this country supports, right? It's not going to be enough.
Right.
And so it's bullshit that they're going to be primaried from the right. They're probably only going to lose re-election from the left, not from the right at this point. We're so close to the midterm elections that it makes no sense to be worried about a difficult vote for your caucus. It's not like this is 2017 or it's not like the term just started. It doesn't make sense to me. There's so many reasons it doesn't make sense. And so when you think about it, the only reason it does make sense is Paul Ryan is a toady who only cares about what Donald Trump thinks, because he and Donald Trump are aligned in their policy views. Like, just because, you know, Paul Ryan looks nicer and speaks nicer and says nicer words doesn't mean deep down he isn't like a racist who just believes in racist things, because like he does believe in gutting Medicaid and Social Security and like fucking over poor people. So it's not that hard of a leap to realize that he's also a racist.
Well, this is also why this whole debate on like civility is important and civility is dead. And the Washington Post, this was so disappointing. Ugh. The Washington Post editorial board was like, leave Sarah Huckabee Sanders alone while she's trying to eat dinner. Fuck you, number one. I'm sorry. These people deserve to be shamed for their racist and just absolutely disgusting disregard of human life. And I will shame them wherever they go. Thank you very much. But also, okay, so I'm going to play along for a minute. Let's say, yes, we need to bring civility back. We need to soften the discourse. We need to go back to a time where we all made goo-goo eyes at each other while we're holding knives behind our backs. Fine. Let's say that that's the case. That just means that Paul Ryan is totally fine in your worldview of politicians. Yeah. Because like you said, he's better looking. He speaks prettier. He, you know, has that like good old boy, like good old frat boy from Wisconsin thing going for him.
Yep.
Like, okay, so that's the return to civility. It doesn't fucking matter if it's civil or not. They're saying the same goddamn thing. They're the same spineless, worthless excuses for human beings. So whether or not you swear or not, whether or not you wrap this in a coat of civility or not, it doesn't change what we're talking about. It doesn't change the fact that Trump said, he accused Democrats of, quote, wanting illegal immigrants to pour into and invest our country.
That word just hurts me so, like, it just makes me like shiver, because it's so disgusting to use that word to describe human beings. It's just, it's not about being uncivil, it's about being inhumane. That's like what he's doing. Like, there's a difference between civility and humanity, and Donald Trump is inhumane. He's not just uncivil.
So basically this is still a big steaming dumpster fire mess that the Republicans created, that Trump created. And you know what? This is now Trump's party. So the Republicans are going to have to own this for a long, long time. And if they try to distance themselves from Trump after he's no longer president, I'm going to be like, bitch, I have receipts.
Yeah.
And this is you. And you better fucking own this. If you're going to be a shitty person, be the best goddamn shitty person you can be and own it.
This is why I'm so worried. It's like, I'm not just worried about like the horrific things that happen day to day here, like today, these Supreme Court rulings that are just like hurting my brain. It's also just like, what's going to happen right after is that, you know, every single Republican is going to get amnesia and pretend the past 4 years of their life didn't happen, just like they did in 2008 when, like, Bush lost, or, like, not Bush lost, but, like, when John McCain lost and, like, Bush left office. It's like, they're going to, like, attempt to rehabilitate themselves. And we let those George Bush people rehabilitate themselves, those people who led us into a faulty war, we let those people rehabilitate themselves, and we're going to let the same people do the same thing after Donald Trump. Sean Spicer is trying to, like, run a fucking TV show where he's a talk show host. We can't, like, let this happen, which is why this bullshit on civility, like, has to end. Because not just, like, should we be uncivil to them? Should we publicly shame them? We're not calling for violence here. We're calling for a public shaming. they should be publicly shamed, but we should also constantly publicly shame them to remember all of the horrific things they did, specifically kidnap over 2,000 kids and make them potential orphans for life.
Right. And not, yeah, and have no process. There's that word again, ding, 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 and have no process or plan to reunite them with their families. I'm really, really worried about the soul of our country. And that is the existential crisis that keeps me up at night. That kept me up last night. Every night before we record, I can no longer sleep because we do these outlines and we do all this reading and we put together these awful stories, you know, that I actually skipped a whole story. Bersha can attest. I called an audible and skipped a whole story on abuse of children who are being detained, of immigrant children who are being detained, because I don't think I can get through it today.
I feel like we're losing our country's like soul as well. And you just have to look at the decision today on the travel ban and like realize that that is what has happened. Because not only did they uphold the travel ban, they also, because the dissent, Sotomayor, cited the fact that this was just like Korematsu, which is a decision that supported internment camps for Japanese people, the majority opinion said, oh, we're just going to overrule Korematsu, like say that it was unlawful. We're going to like get rid of it today. But we're also going to support something that is just as fucking bad as Korematsu. So like, I agree with you totally, Devin. We are on a path that is just really, really scary because we're just losing everything that we at least said was important to us. Human rights, due process, the Constitution, freedom of religion, freedom of association, like everything is just slowly like slipping away. And it seems like no one can like help us. But the only thing that can help, and the only thing that people really should be focusing on when they get really, really bogged down and how horrible everything is, are you voting in November? How many people are you bringing with you to the polls to vote in November? Are you going to make sure that the Senate is flipped to the Democrats? Are you going to make sure we take back the House? Because if we have another judge that is a Trump-appointed judge, if, you know, God forbid Kennedy retires and Trump gets another judge, say goodbye to Roe v. Wade. Say goodbye to any type of due process for undocumented immigrants at all. Because he's going to appoint another hack like Gorsuch, and it's going to happen again and again and again.
And you know what? I think it's really easy for a lot of people in this country to go along with this, you know, ending due process and packing the courts with judges that are going, like you said, the things that we at least said were important to us, human rights, due process, freedom of religion and association. And it's really easy for people to be like, no, they don't get those things. I get those things. It's really easy to other people.
Yeah.
But you know what? Again, I said it earlier in the show and I'm going to say it again and I'm going to keep saying it. And if you think this isn't coming for you, if you don't see the looming threat to yourself, if for no other reason, if I can't convince you to tear up for those children, then for no other reason, maybe start to realize that once these kind of policies have eaten up all of the people who are, you know, in our society considered, you know, the lowest rungs of society, once it's eaten all them up, where do you think it's going to go next? Do you think it's just going to disappear? Do you think it's just going to stop?
I don't think it is. And I think that's why you have to, again, just focus on November, because that is the only thing we can do right now, besides also actively protest and actively donate to candidates and actively organize. Just keep organizing, keep ensuring that people are going to vote, because that's the only way not to get sucked into this rage hole that you could be sucked into.
If you're like me, the list of books that you want to read or those that people suggest that you read is never ending and always expanding. I simply don't have time to read them all. Our sponsor, Blinkist, has solved my long list and your long list of must-reads once and for all. Blinkist is the only app that takes thousands of the best-selling nonfiction books and distills them down to their most impactful elements so you can read or listen to them in under 15 minutes, all on your phone or in your browser. I've started listening to Blinkist on my lunch breaks, which often happen at my desk, unfortunately. I also like to do it while I'm doing the dishes. I hate doing the dishes. And lately I found that having something to listen to for those 15 minutes and using that relative silence, I can really catch up on the books that I'm still lying to myself about sitting down to actually read. And I actually just finished two Blinkists, one for Fire and Fury, which was awesome, and one for Getting Things Done, because I feel like there's just a never-ending to-do list and so much that I want to get done. And it was actually very helpful to listen to one of these productivity books to get the gist of it in 15 minutes. So this is really great for those of us into politics. It takes these essential ideas from nonfiction books and really using that summation to get our brains tingling. 5 million people are already using Blinkist to expand their minds 15 minutes at a time. So you can get started today. Right now, Blinkist has a special offer just for Hellions. Go to Blinkist.com/hellbent to start your free trial or get 3 months off your yearly plan when you join today. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T. So Blinkist.com/hellbent to start your free trial or get 3 months off of your yearly plan. Blinkist.com/hellbent. All right, Varsha. So I quickly want to talk about Trump's trade war, basically, with China and this escalating back and forth between our government and China and the tariffs. And, you know, I was just saying before we started the section to you, Varsha, that honestly, I find it difficult to care about anything that's not our government abducting children from their families at our border. I feel like, you know, that's probably the most important thing. But there are still other things. Government still grinds on. And I feel like this trade war story, even in this administration, even in this time of absolute and utter chaos, this wouldn't be flying under the radar if it weren't for this overarching undocumented immigrant problem. So can you give us a quick overview of the trade war and what's going on?
So basically, Donald Trump is saying that China specifically has unfair trade practices, steals our intellectual property and technology, which is probably true. There's a grain of truth there. But what he is doing to solve that is just putting a ton of tariffs on imported Chinese goods. So as much as $450 billion worth of goods, and we import only like $505 billion worth of Chinese goods anyway.
So it's everything.
Yeah, so basically everything. And so there is like a certain point where these are definitely going to go into effect, and they haven't gone into effect yet. But what's been happening for the past couple months or so is that the U.S. announced the aluminum tariffs, and then China rebuffed with its own tariffs, and vice versa. They just kept going and going and going until we have reached this enormous number right now. But what's happening at this point is not only is he like launching all of these tariffs, which is really just a tax on the American consumer, he's also launching tariffs on European allies, on our Canadian allies, on other allies. He just doesn't believe in any kind of trade at all, any kind of free or fair trade. And that's making it harder and harder for us to keep the pressure specifically on China. Because you can say that China deserves sanctions or China deserves a reexamination of trade practices because of how they act, because they do steal intellectual property. There are problems with how we trade with China. But the escalation is not helping anyone. And that's basically what's happening right now.
Well, and like you said, this is now spilling over into our other allies. And it's no longer really about China specifically. And even if it was, like you said, Varsha, keeping up the pressure specifically on China is almost impossible at this level. Yeah. Because China can then just turn to these other countries, since we're isolating ourselves from our European allies, like you said, from Canada, from Mexico. You know, then China can just go to those countries and say, well, the US is a fucking dumbass. Like, let's just trade with each other. And then all of this tariff nonsense is a moot point anyway. Well, and so I think what's really illustrative of this is Harley Davidson, which is the goddamn America's Next Top Model of Made in the USA. And also specifically Paul Ryan's little slice of heaven, Wisconsin, which is where they're based. They are moving some of their manufacturing out of the U.S. in response to these tariffs. You know, the regulatory filing that Harley Davidson put out on Monday said, quote, Increasing international production to alleviate the EU tariff burden is not the company's preference, but represents the only sustainable option. Too long, didn't read. Trump's policies, Trump's tariffs are driving manufacturing jobs out of this country.
Basically, it's just, it's so funny that he thinks that, because like at a certain point, subsidizing your own country's manufacturing by increasing taxes on foreign countries' manufacturing, to a certain degree, that should increase your country's manufacturing, right? But when you push it too far, all that happens is the foreign countries that want to buy your goods, the domestic companies are just going to move over there to avoid the fucking taxes here. Like, that's all that's going
to
happen.
Right. And I hate to say this again, but Trump cannot bring back manufacturing jobs. And at this point, he's fucking the cause of them leaving. Yeah. So anyone who's like, I voted for Trump for economic reasons because he was going to bring back manufacturing jobs can go fuck themselves. Yeah.
Because he hasn't. There are multiple cases throughout this, not just because of trade, but like where these jobs are leaving. There's multiple results where the tax cut that the Republicans passed isn't giving anybody a fucking bonus. There are multiple cases where, like, because of Trump's budget and stuff like that, like people's like healthcare premiums are going up because of the repeal of the individual mandate and a bunch of other reasons. So Trump is not helping the working class at all. So if you voted for him because of quote-unquote economic anxiety, specifically quote-unquote like bringing back good old steel jobs, manufacturing jobs, he doesn't give a fuck about you. He doesn't care. All he cares about is a photo op. And he got that photo op a couple of like months ago when he's like at some rally when he passed those steel aluminum tariffs or something. And that's it. That's all right. He cares about. He's just going to keep repeating
it. And that's all he wanted. And then he got it and now he doesn't care. And I also want to very quickly talk about how apparently the blatant human rights violations and caging of children is not really enough to move Republican senators to act, but this is, but the tariffs are. So Bob Corker and Jeff Flake are now like running around the Senate being like, we're not going to confirm your judicial nominations if you don't stop this bullshit. And I'm like, oh, I'm really glad you care about something. Too bad it's not children. That'd be nice, but okay, fine. So basically what Corker and Flake are saying is that they are not going to confirm judicial nominations unless this tariff mess is somehow dealt with.
Basically, they're finally realizing, oh my God, we have some power under the Constitution. Like, I had no idea. And they're finally realizing, oh, we can like hold back on certain votes and judicial nominees to stop this tariff thing. But the reason that I'm like nervous about them actually doing this is because they've never had a fucking spine before, right? Like Corker was wailing about how this tax cut is, the tax cut that they passed last year was really bad for the deficit, and then he fucking voted for it anyway, right? So like, this is why like I have no faith in them like following up on this.
But I don't think they're going to.
Yeah. But it's interesting that they're even saying
I just think it's interesting that this is what's moving them. I think it's interesting that this is what they're talking about and that this is where they're like, oh, yeah, maybe we'll do something. Oh, no. But it's about tariffs, which don't get me wrong. Trade is important. Tariffs are important. Our economy is kind of this big, important thing. And I understand all of that. But fuck you, Bob Corker. Like, you can't muster up this sort of outrage for children. Yeah.
Ah! Ugh, I just can't.
So I don't believe they're actually going to do anything about it, but you know, they're saying they are. And Corker and Flake, by the way, are both not seeking re-election.
Yeah.
Let's see. We don't actually have any political, we don't have to play this political game because we're not seeking re-election. And so now all of a sudden we're talking about like not confirming judges and like making Trump's life hard about this one very specific thing. Like I'm not impressed.
Yeah.
Like, go fuck yourself.
Exactly.
All right, Varsha, let's do a quick gratitude check. I've been thinking a lot about the gratitude check, and for me personally, I haven't had the bandwidth to get super political about the gratitude checks because I barely have the bandwidth to read stories about us kidnapping and abusing children as a country. But, you know, so I really want just these gratitude checks to be like something good. So Varsha, what is something you're grateful for?
So what I'm grateful for is an amazing political ad. And usually I really don't like Google ads, but this one is really good and everyone has to watch it today. Like, everyone must go out and watch it. Pause the podcast right now and go and watch it. It's called Doors by MJ Hagar, and she's running against John Carter in Texas for the House. And basically, John Carter hasn't won a race by fewer than 20 points in a decade. So, like, it's really hard for him to lose. But MJ Hagar, who's a veteran, is trying to change that. And this ad is just so amazing because it has this theme of doors. It's like people opening doors for her, her forcing these doors open. And one is like when she decided to become a fighter pilot. One is when her mom, when she was a kid, decided to leave their abusive father. And then one is like when Congressman Carter like didn't want to talk to her about like any like political things because she wasn't a donor. And so this ad is just everything about 2018 that I want to fix, which is, you know, this political corruption, which is the sexism, which is this notion that like women can't do things as well as men. And it just, it takes all of that and puts it into this amazing ad, and I really think she is gonna win. Even though it's an uphill battle, this ad just made my day feel better because it showed me what I was fighting for. It showed me the kind of people that I'm fighting for, the kind of people we could be fighting for in this next Congress, and the kind of people that could lead our country into, you know, reclaiming its soul one day. So this was like the one good thing that I saw this week was this political ad, and I really like it.
It's amazing. I watched it like 3 times and cried. Like, I can admit that. Yeah. You know, it's interesting because kind of on that vein, what I'm grateful for today is similar. It's not this ad in particular, but it is about our prospects of possibly reclaiming our soul as a people moving forward. So we've been doing this podcast for 18 months now. And I've been really entrenched in all of this for, you know, 18 months. And since all of this shit going on at the border has started to happen, I've had more friends approach me to ask me about what's going on than ever in the past. And I take that as a real sign that if Trump's election didn't stir something inside of you, if tax policy, if healthcare, if all of these very important things didn't stir something inside of you, at least I know that there are people out there that this is a bridge too far. Yeah. While it's difficult sometimes, I'm usually pretty good at compartmentalizing the news. And I'm pretty good at doing the show, doing all the research, you know, really immersing myself in the worst of our society, and then keeping it at arm's distance so it doesn't overwhelm me. And allowing myself to enjoy the good things and to, you know, sleep at night. And I haven't been able to do that with this story at all. I haven't been able to compartmentalize. I haven't been able to sleep. I haven't been able to remove myself. It's been really tough. Even though that's the case, and even though, you know, I feel like I'm always on with the news now, the fact that my friends are coming up to me and saying, "Devin, what's going on? Like, help me understand this. I want to know. I want to care. What can I do? What can I do to help?" I have people asking me what they can do. And that's never happened to me before since starting this podcast. And, you know, I live in a very liberal place with liberal friends and, you know, self-proclaimed feminists and allies. And that's all good. But I've never kind of seen the putting their money where their mouth is, basically. And I'm just heartened to know that while it might have taken the absolute worst case scenario, people care. And that means that as long as there's a segment of people who care, I believe we can come back from this. And so that has been getting me through the day.
It's the one thing getting me through the day. It's because people do come up to me and ask as well, like in terms of like messaging on Facebook when something horrible happens, they want me to explain it. I remember like since the Obamacare fight, the tax bill one, everything, someone will come up and ask, it's like, "Can you explain this part? Like, how is this going to affect me? Like, are you going to this individual meeting, et cetera, et cetera?" And so like that does make me feel better. So I totally understand that, Devin. It's like when people actually care, because I remember these exact same people not giving a shit whether it was Jill Stein or Hillary Clinton they were voting for, right? And so like these people have changed, like, you know, like and that makes me feel better. It really does.
And also making me feel better is I'm a I'm allowing myself to let them change. Because if I stick to some sort of ideological purity on this, I'm going to cut my circle and this support and the movement to get Trump out of office and to reclaim our soul. If we have this ideological purity test, I'm not saying that we should like welcome racist Trump voters with open arms, but I'm saying if people are coming to you and saying, I fucked up, I want to change, how can I make this better? Let's not direct our anger inwards, because that's exactly what Trump wants.
Exactly.
All right, Varsha. So this week, the dickwad is Melania Trump. She, former model and current first lady, went to McAllen, Texas to visit one of these holding centers for children who... Actually, this center that she visited in particular were for children who were crossing the border unaccompanied. So unaccompanied minors that were not part of this most recent family separation policy. So that is the center she went to go visit. And on her trip there, like I said, formal model, very into fashion, very good at fashion. I believe I was talking to Drexel about this long time ago, he was like, she always finds the light. She's a very good model and she looks good and she knows how to look good. And so she wore a $39 jacket from Zara that said on the back, quote, I really don't care. Do you? I started this whole thing with she's a model and she's good at fashion because there's been a lot of, oh, it's a jacket. It doesn't mean anything. It was a mistake. English isn't her first language. Maybe she didn't know. And to which I say, go fuck yourself. Like, you've got to be fucking kidding me. One of the things that I like, I know, Varsha, like, you love makeup, and I love seeing your makeup shots on Instagram. I love it. I love, like, your red lipstick, and it's amazing. Yeah. So my version of that, something that I enjoy and the self-care for me, is I really like dressing up. I like clothes. I like fashion. I read, you know, I stalk Pinterest and fashion magazines, and I'm really into it. And as someone who's really into fashion, not even at the level where I have tons and tons of money to spend on it, or I'm Melania Trump, you don't make mistakes like that when you're dressing. A mistake is like you went to the bathroom and your skirt got caught in your underwear and you flashed your ass to everyone in a restaurant. That's a fashion mistake. Wearing a jacket says, I don't care, while visiting fucking children in a detention facility is not a mistake. It's a message.
It really isn't. Also, the reason I know it's not a fucking mistake is I don't want to get all conspiratorial. But again, the jacket is $39 fucking dollars. When has Melania Trump worn anything that was less than $100? Right? So I'm just like, how the fuck do you like not like assume it's a message? Remember last time in Houston, or it was Hurricane Harvey, she went to visit and she wore fucking high heels. Again, like, that was a conscious decision. She thought, I'm most comfortable in heels. I don't care what it looks like to people who are suffering after a hurricane. I want to wear heels. That was the message then. The message here is, it's 80 degrees outside. I probably have much more expensive, much better, lighter jackets to wear in this dry heat. But I'm going to wear this $39 jacket from Zara. Even though she didn't technically wear the jacket in front of the kids, she still wore it in plain view in front of a bunch of photojournalists. And as Drexel and you have pointed out, she knows where the cameras are. She knows where the light is. She knows how to look good. Like, that is her one thing that she knows how to do, because she is a master at it. I'm not going to deny that. So this was obviously not a mistake. And for them to do this is just like, it's like one of two things. It's like, one is like, Melania is just as cruel as Donald Trump, which is true because she used to be a birther, or she is a birther. And two, this administration likes trolling us. And so one of those things can be true. And as Sarah and you always say, it's always both.
It's always fucking both. It can be her being cruel and this administration trolling us at the same time. The fact of the matter is I remember after Harvey, that's where Drexel and I were talking about her finding the light. And we had a broader discussion about first ladies and fashion and fashion's role in politics. And I believe at the time, this really sounds like me, I was basically like, who gives a fuck what she wears, right? She wants to wear 5-inch heels to Texas after a hurricane, whatever, you know? And that's where I was like, that is the kind of distraction that we don't need, right? Let her wear whatever the fuck she wants. She's not an elected official. She's representative of us, but like, she doesn't, I mean, like, whatever, she can wear whatever she wants. This is not that. This is different.
This is actually text on a jacket, okay?
This is not a pair of inappropriate heels. This is a message written out explicitly on a piece of clothing that she was wearing. Oh, and I do want to take a quick second to talk about this idea that focusing on this is somehow, we're not supposed to be enraged by this, or focusing on this is somehow, you know, this is obviously supposed to be a distraction. I mean, the bullshit statement that Melania Trump's spokeswoman put out, she said, quote, "It's a jacket. There was no hidden message. After today's important visit to Texas, I hope this isn't what the media is going to choose to focus on." So basically they were saying, you can't, don't talk about this. Like, don't make it a big deal. And it's obviously supposed to be a distraction. It was obviously crafted to, let's remember what she was doing. She was going to visit a facility that's holding unaccompanied minors and going to an area that is taking children away from their families at the border. And so I think the best way to have Melania Trump do that and get the positive press for them doing it, but also distracting from the fact that those are facilities that we have that she has to visit in the first place, is to throw this wrench of this jacket in there. And I'm not saying that that's not true. I'm saying that that's true, and we can also be pissed about it. All right, Varsha, last but not least, let's have a couple of action items that our listeners can do after they listen to the show. So first, Racist Texas is an organization that is offering legal services to those detained at the border. They do it on a pro bono basis. They are not a new organization, but they are currently on the ground in Texas dealing with this crisis as it comes up. They are a fantastic organization to donate to, and it's a way to get your money directly to the people who need it. So their website, this actually warms my cold feminist heart. Their website keeps crashing due to high volume of traffic of people trying to donate to them. So I grabbed the direct donate link, which is actionnetwork.org/fundraising/donate-to-races-Texas. I believe there was a Kickstarter or GoFundMe where a group of people tried to raise like $1,500 for Racist Texas, and they ended up with what, like $15 or $20 million. So they're a fantastic organization. They also have, you know, they also put out a series of videos talking about what they're doing with the money, how they're helping people on the ground. Really, if you have any money to spare, if you have any pocket change, please donate.
Definitely donate. I donated. There's also a really great website called IReallyDoCare.com, I think. And it was, yeah, Parker Malloy created this website, and she basically has, it's a bunch of different organizations, and Amanda Littman initially created like this, like place, this Kids Act, Kids at the Border, like donation section where you can donate to a bunch of different organizations. But Parker Malloy just put it in a really easy website, which is IReallyDoCare.com. And you can just look at the different organizations they're donating to and make a donation there as well. Or you can donate directly to Racist, whichever you prefer. Also, the second thing that everyone should do is call their member of Congress to support bills that are ending the separation more explicitly, that are ending family detention, that are providing protection for Dreamers. Just make it very clear to your member of Congress what you want out of immigration reform, and just keep calling. And it's the same thing with any other issue that you find that you're passionate about, whether it's the Muslim ban. Like, if you want to call your member of Congress and tell them, hey, release a statement about how the Muslim ban is trash and should never have been like enacted, and try to pass legislation to overturn it. Like, there are a bunch of different things you can call your member of Congress about, but definitely start with the fact that 2,500 kids, or at least 2,000 kids, have been kidnapped from their parents, and we have no plan to reunite them, and the Trump administration might try to detain more.
Right. And if you live in Corker or Flakes districts, you can call them and be like, hey, yeah, don't vote for those judicial nominees, but also maybe hold them over the administration's head so that they do something about this fucking kidnapping children at the border.
Also, I just want to quickly add, like, I know November seems like it's far away, but if you live in Tennessee, Texas, Arizona or Nevada, you have to be campaigning for the Democratic person who is like running for Senate in those states. So Bresden, Beto O'Rourke, Kristen Sinema, and like Jackie Rosen, like all those four people, they have to win. And every other Democrat running for Senate this November has to win, because we cannot allow another Trump-appointed Supreme Court justice to sit on the bench. And we will focus on forcing those newly elected Democrats to not give another SCOTUS hearing to Trump after they're elected, but the first step is to get them elected so we can take the gavel out of Mitch McConnell's fucking hands. Same thing with the House. If you want Paul Ryan or Paul Ryan's successor not to have power, and if you want to have investigative power over Donald Trump's taxes, all the other corruption that's been going on, you have to get people to support Democrats in the House and in the Senate. Not just for all the reasons just stated, like the Supreme Court nominee, other legislation, investigating the president, but also specifically so we can rein in the fact that the DOJ and ICE is basically terrorizing undocumented immigrants at the border.
Right. So there's a lot to handle. I know that I'm having a hard time handling it all. Again, when we set up Hellbent, part of our mission was to be open and honest about our own shortcomings and vulnerabilities, and you know, I just want everyone who's listening to know that this shit is bananas, and it can be so difficult to get through, and this community means so much. Varsha, you mean so much, and you know, take care of yourselves, and make sure that you know it's okay to be sad about this. It's okay to be mad about this, and we can change this. I believe that we can.
I really do. And just do your best at like whatever you're focusing on. Like choose one thing, choose one of these action items. I will remember to put them on Twitter or in the Facebook group so everyone remembers. And like choose one thing and just do it at like the best of your ability. I know it's a difficult time.
So thank you, Varsha, for coming on again. This was a wonderful discussion. I will be back here on Thursday with a very special guest. So in the meantime, Hellions, raise some hell and remember to take care of yourselves. And let's all practice empathy together. Empathy does not mean civility, but it does mean opening our hearts just a little bit. Thank you.